What I'd give to hear those three little words. Man, that's such a wonderful phrase.
Patricia T. O'Connor is here. She visits us once a month to talk about the English language and related. And sometimes we get off on other languages, it turns out.
Yes.
But Pat is the author of a number of books, Woe Is I, and then the version for kids, Woe Is I Junior, Words Fail Me, You Send Me, Origin of the Specious, the most recent. And we take your calls when she's here at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. And we also field your comments on our show page at WNYC.org. I've taken care of business.
Yeah.
you want to talk about words that we love to hate?
Yeah. You know, every year about this time, language gurus come out with these lists of words of the year. It seems that
I hate them all.
Yeah, every dictionary company does it. The American Dialect Society, which is made up of linguists and other language professionals, does it. For instance, this year the American Dialect Society's word of the year was tweet, which I think is a pretty good choice. They usually choose a word that's current, it's in the news, and it might have some staying power.
And we can't avoid. For
no.
example,
it's
people might have hated Google and Googling, and
right.
I've Googled you and all
uh-huh.
of that. But
right.
we have no choice in the matter.
And
now
stay.
Everybody, well not everybody's it. Tweeting. I'm not tweeting. But
yeah, I haven't
a lot
tweeted
of people,
yet. But
to me, it's always ain't she tweet.
Yeah, Google was the American Dialect Society's word of the decade.
Mm.
They just decided that this month. So the first decade of of this millennium was the decade of the Google. So, but at any rate, what I wanted to talk about was there is one group that diverges a little bit, and this is Lake Superior State University in Michigan. It's done this every year for 35 years. It has published its list of words that should be banned from the language because they are misused, overused, or generally useless terms. And I kind of like this one, this list every year, because it's always words that we're just up to the gills with. But their number one word this year, I would have chosen it as number one, but their number one was shovel ready. Remember shovel ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's faded over time. It seems a lot of the stuff that was touted to be shovel ready so that it could get money wasn't as shovel ready as it was supposed to be.
It was swept under the rug.
That's right. They also chose transparent and transparency. Czar, calling someone a czar who's a leader. I think that's annoying.
Except that it's so useful in crossword puzzles.
That's true.
Well,
what
the Times tends to do TSAR. They rarely do CZAR.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I have to call Will Shorts about that.
Yes. I always thought, by the way, he should have married the critic Sarah Boxer.
Boxer.
Yes. Two very nice people. Not sure they knew each other, but both at the Times. Anyway, another obnoxious word in the Lake Superior University list was sexting. And app, as in there's an app for that.
Mm-hmm.
Friend as a verb, mm-hmm. and I assume unfriend would have been also teachable moment. Toxic assets, meaning bad debts or loans or whatever. And I think I like this one most of all. They put it in number 12, too big to fail. We know now there is no such thing as too big to fail. So anyway, there you go. We won't be hearing any more about words of the year until next January.
Well, I suspect our listeners have a few that they dislike.
I'm sure they
well.
Do.
And they can give us a call and suggest them. We'll put on what we think are the best candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Should we take some calls?
Yes, let's do it.
Our number 212-433-9692. Bill from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My complaint, one of my complaints is the conversion of an intransitive verb into a transitive verb, saying graduated college instead of graduated from college. I looked it up in the Oxford English Dictionary, and they said most authorities say it should be used intransitively and say graduated from college.
Except that you can say Harvard graduated him in 1984. That's transitively. And that's a correct use. But I know what you mean. People say they graduated Stanford
college.
Instead of Stanford graduated them.
It's become standard use, even though I won't do it.
Right. Another example of the verb function changing is my husband and I just did some research into progress, used as a verb meaning a transitive verb, as in let's progress this nation, as a former candidate for a vice president used to say. But we won't get political about it. But it turns out that people used to use progress transitively all the time. And it's just fallen out of favor in the last century or so. But now that people are starting to do it again,
the
purists among us are finger pointing. But you never, words change function all the time. Who knows, graduate may come around too one of these days.
Thank you for calling us, Bill.
Thank you for listening.
And we go now to another Bill. Bill from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
You're not the same Bill. You just went from Brooklyn to Manhattan?
Well, I used to live in Brooklyn. I'm calling because there's a very popular movie that's been very well received and highly praised by critics called Me and Orson Welles. And is that correct? I would think it should be I and Orson Welles or Orson Welles and I.
Well, not necessarily. It depends on whether, you see, all you have here is a compound either subject or object. You don't know whether it's a subject or object. In other words, the movie may be about, it may be, the title may be short for, this movie is about me and Orson Welles. Or it could be short for, Orson Welles and me are good buddies. In that case, it would be a misuse. But just that fragment doesn't give you any clues about how it's supposed to be used. So it could, in fact, be correctly used.
Well, the two of them, though, are implied to be doing something together.
Not necessarily.
I
if that's
and
the only.
Orson Welles are making a movie or putting on a play.
No,
if
the title is just me and Orson Welles, you don't know whether it's being used as a subject or an object.
So either one is correct?
Yeah. I mean, it could be short for come along with me and Orson Welles, or here's a movie about me and Orson Welles. So what I'm saying is that when you just have the pronoun by itself, you don't know whether...
They're equal. Me and Orson Welles are
exactly.
equal in that.
Right. Okay. Now, if you said me and he, or I and him, then you could tell that something was wrong.
Then there's me and Mrs. Jones.
Oh, that's true.
We don't say I and Mrs. Jones.
No,
we have a good thing going on.
Right. And me and Bobby McGee. Some titles don't often use I.
we go now to George from Manhattan. Hi, George.
Hi, Len. Hi, Patricia. I'm calling again because of my favorite pet peeve, which has been driving me crazy since the turn of the year. This thing about the decade of the 21st century is concluded with the end of the, 1999. We're in the first decade still. It will conclude on December 31st, 2010. It's the decade, not just a decade. A decade is any 10
I'm not
years.
Sure you're right, and I think that you're stacking the decade here. a decade is, people will say he's lived three decades. It doesn't
right.
mean that it began in 1960
no.
and then went 1970
as
and
1980. As long as you're talking about a period inclusive of 10 years, I think you're...
A decade.
Yes.
But the first decade of the 21st century began in 2001.
That was a common complaint when we had the turn of the millennium. People
right.
were saying we don't have a new millennium until 2001. But that's an argument it's been argued on both sides over and over again. So
and will be argued until the next millennium and through the next decade.
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you for calling us, George. But basically, what are we going to say about decades here? I mean, decades are 10 years, however
true.
You figure
a decade
them.
Is 10 years. That's about all that you can say that everyone will agree on.
But you could say she was a product of the 60s decade, which does mm-hmm. not necessarily mean that she began in 1960 and ended in 1970, would that be? Or 61
to 70. But the problem is when you're talking about where the decade begins, or which I think is 2000, January 2000, I think, most people would think that's when the decade began. But the first year of that decade wasn't concluded until a year from there, you see.
Yeah, 2001.
So, right. So for a lot of people, they think, well, this is when it begins because now we've lived the first year of it.
Yeah, well, I don't think that we should then, we should tell people what our birthday is, but we should tell them when our first birthday is. I mean, it's just as illogical.
right.
This is WMYC, WMYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We're also getting a whole bunch of questions or comments on our show page at WNYC.org on the hated words. A listener in Somerville would like to either strike the word awesome from the English language or charge a tax for it.
The problem is, how do you collect that tax?
But we go through those words, don't we?
Oh, yes.
Awesome is the latest. There have been others in the past. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. And I think when awesome gets tired, and I think it's already a bit tired, we'll move on to another one, which then will become just as annoying. Words that are on everyone's lips
when
get annoying,
kid,
even if they're perfectly good words.
It was great.
Uh-huh.
And then it was
excellent,
bad.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Excellent, yeah. Right. It used to be an interjection, even.
And
excellent.
The Brits say super.
Right.
Farida of Fort Lee asks, is there a difference between the two forms of nouns ending in ence and the same word when some attach a Y to the form? That is, exigence and exigency, or relevance and relevancy. I often hear this, especially in lawyer speak.
Often the extra syllable isn't really needed. I don't know that, well, exigency, that would be a noun for exigence. Now, I don't know that normal people use either one of those, to tell you the truth. It varies from word to word. Sometimes the word that's a little bit longer is more often used, and sometimes the word that's a little shorter is more often used.
Exigence is probably used by lawyers.
Probably.
And few else.
Right, right.
Bill, another Bill. Boy, we've been getting a lot of calls from Bills. This one from Brooklyn. Hi, Bill, you're on the air.
Hello. When I was going to school, I know the grammarians frowned on the phrase comprised of. One was supposed to use composed of.
Mm-hmm.
And composed of still sounds okay to me, and it sounds right. And
mm-hmm.
and comprised of sounds illiterate to me.
Right.
It's always 98% of the time. It's always a comprised of, which is I don't think is right.
Right. I used to get that drummed into me too, and later further drummed into me when I was a newspaper editor, that you just strike out comprised because it'll never be used correctly. Generally, I think the rule is that the whole comprises the parts. Let me see here. Usage note. Yes, the whole comprises the parts. That's the traditional usage, and the parts compose the whole. So that you shouldn't say the union is comprised of 50 states. But
I have never heard anybody
say
composed of 50 states.
No, no. No, you don't say composed of. I think comprised of is one of those things that's eventually going to become accepted because people like to use comprised of. They don't like to use comprised alone.
Hmm.
So whatever people think a word means is what it means. And however most educated people think a word should be used is going to become how it should be used. These things are just a matter of popular opinion. It's basically democracy in action.
At least in the English language. In other languages, in French, that is not the case, because they have a special committee that gets together and says you can't use this word.
Right, the Academy. Fortunately, we don't have that. And I think that would be a terrible thing if we did. It would never work.
Mm-hmm.
It would never work for English. I'm not sure it's working for French, to tell you the truth.
It sure ain't. Marjorie from South Orange, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have noticed that two words that I grew up with have changed in their pronunciation. One was contribute. I would make I want to contribute to this. Now people are saying contribute.
Really?
Yes.
I've never heard that.
I haven't.
I hear it. I hear it on the radio, not on your program. I hear it on with radio announcers. I've heard it at the United Nations. People from other countries are using that pronunciation. And the other word is homage. I pay homage, and now people are saying homage.
Well,
I just wondered, have you ever heard this?
Some people say homage.
Homage is a French word. It's spelled H-O-M-M-A-G-E. It's not an English word. The English word is homage. Or homage.
Right.
You can say it with a silent H if you want, but the accent is on the first syllable, and it's been in English since the 1200s. There's no reason to pronounce it as if it's a French word.
Mm.
That's why I always get upset if I see homage spelled in italics, for instance, in a news article, as if it's a French word.
But we have a number of words like that that cause confusion. Banal, banal is another one.
Yeah, right. And the thing about that one is there are three correct pronunciations, and they're all about even. Banal, banal, and banal, as in anal, canal, and all. So there's no way to say that incorrectly. But homage sort of gets my goat because it's a perfectly good English word, and we're giving it away to the French.
The French wouldn't give it to them.
I never hear. And I suspect she's talking about British announcers that she may be hearing on NPR or at the UN. She mentioned the UN because they do have a way of they make put different emphases on words than we do. They often say controversy instead of controversy.
Well, that Robin Lustig, you can't trust him to pronounce any word correctly. We'll take a little break, and we'll come back with more from Patricia T. O'Connor and your calls to 212-433-9692. But first this. We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, and we're talking about the English language. And reading that thing about sound check reminded me that there's a word that I'm always unsure about. Do you say culinary or do you say culinary?
I say culinary.
And I said culinary.
Yeah.
Let's call this whole thing off, Pat. Schism,
and I say schism.
Yeah, but the dictionary says I should say schism.
Yeah. Well,
although nobody else says it.
Nobody in the world says schism. Oh,
yeah, but you see, I think that it's fun to use a word correctly and have people challenge you, because then you wind up in a conversation about language, and we always have so much fun talking about language, don't we?
We do. And look here, under culinary, the first pronunciation given is culinary.
Okay,
from the Latin, culinarius.
I'm not saying another word.
From culina, kitchen.
A listener left a comment, awesome is not nearly as bad as amazing, usually pronounced.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Are you really amazed by your new pair of shoes or that lasagna you ate or that song that you just heard?
I get a lot of mail about amazing. Amazing. The four-syllable version.
So it's bothering a lot of people.
Yeah.
We have a listener in Austin, Texas, Estelle, who writes, she dislikes adding ing to create an adjective, especially when an adjective already exists. Addicting instead of addictive. concerning instead of concern. Now, right. I see nothing wrong with something being addicting.
Well, don't you think it sounds a little odd? We have the word addictive.
I think addictive means something different.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, no, if you mean addicting as a like a participial adjective.
Like heroin.
Is addicting?
Coffee, heroin is addictive would sounds different to me.
It sounds too medical?
No, it sounds like too final. One is, I don't know, maybe making too fine a point over nothing.
Well,
so I'm going to drop that. I don't care. I don't want to fight for that one. Should we take some more calls?
Yes, let's take some more calls.
Paul from Ridgewood, hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. Two real quick questions. Whence or from whence? From whence seems redundant to me.
Mm-hmm. It should be whence.
Okay, well, I was just reading Lawrence Stern, and he uses from whence.
Yeah.
That's why it baffled me.
Yeah, a lot of people use from whence.
Well, Lawrence Stern did live in another century. And
right.
Is that part of the problem?
Well, I'm not sure if that's part of the problem.
Another country as well?
Well, people here and in England say from whence, and I'm not sure why, because whence means from where or from the place that. It's a mystery to me, but it's a common misuse. And probably dictionaries now are saying that it's a variant usage of it, but
yeah. My other quick question, has enormity finally slid over to meaning the same thing as enormousness?
You know, when my husband and I did our last book, Origins of the Species, we did a little kind of obituary or an eulogy to enormity because it really... It's gone back and forth over the centuries, believe it or not. From one century, it would mean largeness. Another century, it would mean horrendousness. And it's meant horrendousness for the last century, and now it's starting to mean largeness again. We can't complain because that's what happens with language. But again, how do we say, oh, the enormity of it? You know, we don't use words like wickedness anymore or...
What about the word like multiple? Many of my younger staff members would say, oh, so-and-so has made, Pat O'Connor has made multiple appearances on our show. And that is something that is just not part of my sense of the language.
Yeah, again, it's not a misuse. You can't call it a misuse. But why not say many or lots of or something? I don't know. Multiple, I do hear more and more. Another word that I hate to see go by the wayside along with enormity is bemused.
Mm-hmm.
People use bemused over and over again to mean funny or amusing, amused.
Mm-hmm.
And it meant puzzling or puzzled or lost in thought or very thoughtful or that kind of thing. It didn't mean amused. And... it's slipping away. So I'm not sure. We really can't do anything about it. It's just too bad.
Stacy from Maplewood, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Two quick comments. The first is that my pet peeve is the confusion of the biological construct sex with gender.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's sex is a biological fact. It's unchangeable no matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas gender refers to the social construct, and people tend to use the word sex now as a social construct rather than a biological construct. And my second pet peeve is Microsoft English. My husband is from England, and it's one of the banes of our existence that when you type in Microsoft Word, it will change the word which to that.
Mm-hmm.
No kidding?
Oh, yes, it does.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
it doesn't change it. It offers that as an alternative. Of course, it also offers all sorts of odd alternatives, taking things from the plural to the singular and vice versa.
Oh, my.
That,
I would just disable that function because I've never seen a grammar check program that wasn't absolutely ridiculous. Any sentence that you start with with what, for example. They want to put a question mark at the end. It's not always a question.
But what about the sex and gender thing? Gender has become now the synonymous with sex in some
right
because people don't want to say
what
sex.
Gender is your baby instead of what sex is your baby,
and that's because sex has come to mean for most people a certain act,
an activity, right? Which I think is too bad because I think gender is a little bit. It sounds a little bit to me, social work ease or I don't know, prudish. It seems like. It's an avoidance of the word sex.
And that's why we're going to have gender relations sometime. I don't mean you and I mean
right.
People
studies,
in general.
Right, studies in universities, right. Gender, well, they do have gender studies, departments of gender studies. And I suppose you wouldn't want to call it sex studies because it would sound like they were into sex therapy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind talking about a baby's sex or someone's sex preference.
Listener, Neil in Washington, says his most hated word this year, it's actually a phrase, is going forward, which is used by almost all business and political speakers, including the President of the United States.
Right. Well, what's the alternative? Going backward? Going backward, let's do this. It's silly. I know. It's a silly usage. I think it'll fall by the wayside eventually.
Another listener says words we hate or how they're used. The finance folks at my job constantly use spend as a noun, such as our admin spend this year is 10% above cost.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible. Our spend?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Trust businesses to come up with stuff like that. Ugh.
Well, yeah. Well, we had somebody who used to work here who, during fundraisers, would say, we are offering this bag to induce you.
That sounds to me like if you put your finger down your throat, you're inducing yourself, right?
Alan from Manhattan asks, every language has you in plural except English. And wants to know if English ever did have plural why did it disappear? The answer, of course, is yes.
Right. We once had four versions of you, for singular and plural and for subject and object. They were ye, you, thee, and thou. And over the centuries, they all became mushed together into you. This was long before anybody thought about grammar rules or we would now be admonished for saying you. As we're now admonished for saying they in place of he or she.
Hmm.
They was once an acceptable, neutral pronoun.
Oh, I had teachers who gave me such a hard time when people said everyone get their coats. It had to be everyone get his coat.
Right. It used to be a number neutral pronoun before the 18th century.
And now we're moving back to that.
I think the reason is we need an all-purpose pronoun, and we're going to have one whether grammar purists, and I'm one sometimes, like it or not. It's just a gap in the language, and there's a reason that the people use that word for that purpose. We need a nondescript pronoun that's subject, object, masculine, feminine, singular, and plural.
In the case of you, it also we use it in another way. We'll say when you use that word, you're implying something.
Mm-hmm.
And the British get around that by saying when one does it, although that sounds kind of stuffy to Americans.
Uh-huh, right.
But you becomes one of the more complicated, complex, and confusing words because it's singular, plural, and
also
a stand-in for the word one.
And there is an impulse toward a plural you, and that supposedly that impulse, I mean, it may be what leads people to say you all or y'all or yous.
Hmm.
Yous guys.
Harry from the Bronx, you don't say yous guys in the Bronx anymore, do you?
No, haven't said that for years. a question on, it's funny, while I was waiting, about six other things came into my head. But a generation, I'm 75 years old, all my life, I've used 33 years as a generation. Now I hear people saying 20 years.
Hmm. Well, I've always thought of a generation as the time it takes from the time a baby is born until that baby is having children of his or her own.
So the average worked out to be about 33, as if you get married at 20 and you're having children till you're 50.
Yeah.
Is how it would, but people will say 20 years, like Generation X and Generation Y. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that's moving a little quickly.
Also, while I was waiting, you mentioned bemused. I hate when people use the word perused to mean scan. Perused is a thorough reading. It is not a scan.
Yeah. I get mail to that effect, too.
Just a final one. Chomping at the bit. Now,
it's champing.
Patricia, you did say before that if most people use it, it may become this. I hate to see the day when we are chomping at the bit.
Well, you know, I would guess that if you go around and ask most people how they would say that expression, most of them would say chomping. Although a horse champs at his bit, moving it around in his mouth. That's champing. But I mean, if you chomped on a bit, you would break your teeth. Champing is just to move something around, gum it, kind of. But, again, words mean what people think they mean.
Suzanne in Harlem says, I've been hearing bespoke more and more, and I want to know what it means.
Bespoke?
As in the bespoke coat.
Right. It's something that you order on commission or have made just for you is bespoke or bespoken. And that's a word that used to be around all the time. And it's, especially in the 19th century, it was really common. And now it's coming back.
That's because more and more people are having things tailored for them personally?
I don't know how they can afford it. But anyway, I mean, you'd think it would die out because of the economy.
Well, there's a company that advertises in the New York Times pretty much every day for bespoke suits.
Mm-hmm.
Now on special sale, just $2,000 for $3,000. And we'll throw in a shirt.
Throw in a pair of cufflinks. But, bespoke used to be much more often. When you, its etymology is interesting. You just speak for something. To speak for something used to mean to order it. And something that had been spoken for was bespoke or bespoken.
Gary is concerned about seeing ampersands used more and more in to replace the word and. That's probably because of email.
Yeah, and I found myself doing that the other day in an email to someone who a reader or listener. And when I was rereading the email, I said, what? I'm putting in ampersands for and I changed them. It wouldn't particularly bother me to get that from someone else, but I would try not to do it myself. I think it looks a little bit casual.
Now, you're going to be back on February 17th, but people can get in touch with you still by sending you email at
grammarphobia.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
if they want to add to the conversation, mailbox@grammarphobia.com?
Right.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have Pat O'Connor on our show.